And then I heard that there were protests. I said, where are the protests? I don't see any protests. I did see a small protest today when I came, very small. So a lot of it is fake news, I hate to say. But you saw the people waving the American flag, waving your flag. It was tremendous spirit and love. There was great love. It was an alliance. And I didn't see the protesters until just a little while ago. And it was a very, very small group of people put in for political reasons. So it was fake news. Thank you.
It must be nice to only see the things that you want to see, to not have to face reality. I bet if you walked into the doctor, him or really any conservative, walked into the doctor, found out they've got cancer. Cancer? Pfft, fake news, deep state conspiracy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 300, which I have long teased as the last one. But is it? We'll talk about that at the end. So, Richard Engel is a seasoned journalist. The man has seen it all. The man has heard it all. And I think it was last year or the year prior, I can't remember which one, but it was fairly recent, Richard Engel was kidnapped by terrorists and held for like 3.5 weeks. And I thought, because you know what? I go, if Engel doesn't get killed, and Engel's one of my favorites because he's just a straight shot reporter. Like, this is his thing. Like, this is what he lives for. I go, if they don't kill him, if they don't let Richard Engel go, you know, if they let him go, there is no way that he's going to return to journalism. And they let him go, and he was out for like a week, like almost nothing. And he's right back to work because the man loves what he does. Yeah, he's seen it all and he's heard it all, but this is his thing. You can't shake him. He's unflappable. Well, I heard him get flapped after Trump made this remark about protesters. What protesters?
There were thousands of people on the streets. They were protesting Trump, not celebrating his arrival. So the fact that he can say these kind of things with a straight face when they are so contradictory to the facts that lots and lots of journalists saw for themselves is troubling.
It really is an alternate reality that these folks get to live in. So Justin Amash, when he was giving one of his town halls, which, by the way, one of very few Republicans that's actually giving a live town hall to his people. Everybody's representative, including mine, has been running from us for the entire Trump administration. They love Trump. Like, my Congresswoman, Jamie Herrera Butler, loves Trump. Gives Trump everything and anything he wants. And even during the 2018 blue wave year, she got reelected, and fairly easily. She lost a few points, but she got reelected fairly easily. Okay, well then you know what? You shouldn't be afraid of your constituents. You should want to hear from us. And still, mine, a complete chicken dump, doesn't want to talk to her people. Justin Amash did a couple weeks ago. I covered this, and the thing that I missed at the time was there was one woman in the crowd that gave this brief on-camera interview. And she said, I was surprised. I was surprised to hear anything negative about Trump in the Mueller report. And it's because of the type of the media that she consumes.
I was surprised to hear there was anything negative in the Mueller report at all about President Trump. I hadn't heard that before. And I mainly listen to conservative news, and I hadn't heard anything negative about that report, and President Trump had been exonerated.
You and I hear it a lot because we live in reality, and most of us, I suppose I'm not included in this, do not consume conservative media. I've talked about this before on the show, that I remember learning about Fox News and going, well, that'll fizzle out eventually. Nobody's going to go to a completely biased news source because they got to know that they're not getting information, good information. And I was wrong. I've often said that if there were a left-wing Fox, there's no freaking way that I would support it. And that still stands true today. And recently, I've come to the conclusion that cable news, it's got a bias, all cable news, but it's not a bias towards one political party. Either Fox is obviously in the tank for whatever Republican, and there's no such thing as too far to the right. We have a neo-Nazi president now, and there's no such thing as too far to the right. But what about the others? The ones that Fox refers to as left-wing outlets. Left-wing outlets. Their bias is towards money, and they are not giving us much good information. And in their pursuit of money, they themselves, MSNBC included, with the exception of Rachel, they themselves are helping to destroy democracy.
He's just for our freedom. We don't want socialistic policies. We want to be free.
Any disappointments or frustrations?
No, none at all. None at all. I hope we have the next four with him, and then after that, I hope his son runs.
So we're going to call this the Dumb Trumper series. He's for freedom. He's for freedom. Okay? So this is a clip from NBC, MSNBC specifically. And they go around and they're asking, hey, what do you like about him? He's for freedom. Okay, dig this. Press on that. Hey, what do you mean he's for freedom? The other ones aren't for freedom? Are the other ones for putting everybody in jail? Okay, I hope he runs. I hope he wins. And I hope his son runs. That's where you press even further. You want his son to run? Why do you think his son would be a good president? But they don't. And they just let this stuff go. And then these dumb audio clips from these dumb Trumpers float around out there. People hear them and they go, oh, that's news. Yeah, that's real news, son.
It's an excellent job. Excellent. You guys need to back off. Leave him alone. It's truth.
What's the main reason you'll vote for him again?
The main reason? Because he's one of the best presidents that we've had for a very long time. Very long time. He doesn't lie. I know y'all say he does. He doesn't.
One of the best presidents that we've had for a very long time. A very long time. Do you know why she repeated herself? She repeated herself because she doesn't believe what she's saying. And if you press her on it, she's not going to be able to explain it. And then let's get to the biggest whopper in that clip. He doesn't lie. I know y'all say he does, but he doesn't. Okay. So, let's just take the news out of it. Let's take the New York Times and the Washington Post and NBC News. Let's just lift them out of it. And let's just take the president's own words and put them side by side and watch him say the exact opposite thing in the same hour, in the same day, just completely contradict himself. Sometimes even in the exact same breath. He can't help but lie. But if you're a conservative and you consume nothing but conservative media, that's not a lie. That's just him spreading freedom.
Any concerns about the Democratic opponents and what kind of a matchup he might face?
They don't have a leg to stand on.
They don't have a leg to stand on. Your wages are depressed, and the Democrats are talking about raising them. Your health care is crap, and that's being diplomatic about it. But they don't have a leg to stand on. We are spending trillions of dollars in pointless wars, and Trump is trying to start another pointless war after he said he wouldn't. And the Democrats would like to end those wars and get that money back. They don't have a leg to stand on. Amazing. So, in my area, the Portland-Vancouver area, I oftentimes find myself down in the city of Salem, Oregon's capital. And this week was no exception. and I landed in the middle of a Klan rally. Hold up. Let me explain that. In Oregon, they're trying to pass a cap and trade bill, you know, for cleaner air, so that we're putting less crap into the air. That makes sense, right? Well, to you and me, it makes sense. But to conservatives, it does not. So at first, there were just a few protesters, and then the trucking companies started turning out. And I ended up making the mistake on the way to my destination of driving in front of the Capitol. And then I got trapped. I got stuck because the big rigs were out there and they weren't moving. And I did not realize that until I got out there and I was unable to go around them. They just shut down traffic. They're out there idling. They're out there pumping more waste into the air, the exact same thing that the damn bill is trying to stop, and they're holding up signs about how they're gonna lose their livelihood. It's tough to embrace the future, I know. Okay, the cap and trade bill will penalize their employers. It says, hey, find a way to put less waste into the air so that we can lower cancer rates, so that everybody can breathe the goddamn air. And we can live longer, and we can have the planet for longer. But these people go, no, no, no. Even if it destroys the planet, we don't want that. So Oregon, the Oregon chambers are controlled by Democrats. You say, Melvin, well, fine. Then they can just pass the bill, and then these people can go home and choke on clean air. Stop. No. So there's a thing. And this exists in really all Congresses, whether it's D.C., whether it's Oregon, whether it's Washington. There's a thing called decorum, where you have to have a certain number of congressmen and women in the chamber in order for you to hold a vote. In order to reach decorum in the Oregon House, they need all the Democrats plus two Republicans. It's just the threshold that they have. And with that, the Republicans decided to not come into work this week and not come into work last week. They're not even in the state. And they're making telephone calls to the media from undisclosed locations. This is real. The people that complain that you need to go to work and shut up all the time have decided not to go to work. And they're getting massive support from their conservative base. What you're hearing right now is that every single thing a conservative says means absolutely nothing, and it only pertains to you if you are not a Republican. Those are their standards. And so they're talking to one of the congressmen from his undisclosed location in North Idaho because, you know, if you're going to take some time off work, you may as well go visit some Nazis. And he said, if you come after me, you better send bachelors and they better be well armed. What does that mean? He plans on killing the people that come after him. The governor has, Governor Kate Brown has the power to send state troopers after them to make them come back to work. And this guy effectively saying, if the state troopers come after me, then I will kill them. Make sure you send bachelors, because I don't want to have to kill somebody that has a family at home. So, A, they want to kill cops. And B, they don't want to work. You say, Melvin, maybe that's where things slip. Maybe that's where support slipped for these guys that need to get their asses back to work. No, that is not where it slipped. For conservatives, it's okay to kill cops as long as it's a conservative saying that he wants to kill cops. So they're talking to some Yahoo, the local news, in front of a grocery store. And they ask him. And he says, well, she sends the state police after them. Well, that makes this an act of war. An act of war? It's a whole different reality that they get to live in. And it must be beautiful. Everything is perfect all the time. They don't have to believe reality. And I struggle not because they get to live in this completely made up perfect world. Okay, if they believe that Trump is a great president, okay, you're stupid. But I suppose I'm not that hurt. There's always going to be some dummies. If he's a Nazi, they're Nazis. All the Nazis support each other. I suppose I'm not hurt. I am, but I ain't. It's just, you know, there's going to be some Nazis. Well, obviously, we never got rid of all of them. They think he doesn't lie. Okay, what the fuck? He doesn't lie. He clearly lies, but okay. I suppose there's always going to be somebody that's that dumb. But the problem comes when they don't believe things like the dead children.
How many children 17 years old or younger have died in DHS, ICE, or CBP custody since you took office?
I will get back to you on that figure. What I can tell you is that we have saved 4,200 migrants who are at distress.
Approximately how many have died?
I understand your question, sir. I will get back to you.
There is a viral photo, a photo that went viral, a photo that I wish that I had not had to see this week of a father and his young daughter. We're going to do this segment. Say their names. Oscar Alberto Martinez and his 23-month-old daughter, Angie Valeria Martinez. Say their names. Oscar Alberto Martinez. Say his name. Angie Valeria Martinez. Say his name. 23 months old. They presented themselves at the border after making the incredibly long trip. And the amount of people that the Trump administration is allowing to be taken in at the border has been dramatically reduced. They're imprisoning the people that they do have, but it's been dramatically reduced. And when this gentleman presented himself and his daughter at the border, they were told to go the home, go home, get out of here. And so this man and his 23-month-old daughter attempted to swim a really long, wide body of water to get over here. And he was young. He was fit. He probably thought he could make it. Of course, his daughter can't swim, and they don't have any sort of a life jacket or anything. So he tucks his daughter under the back of his shirt. Now, where her head pops out where his head is. And they didn't make it. They both drowned. And then their bodies washed up on the shore. And I didn't go looking for this story. I look for most of the stories that are on here. But I didn't go looking for this story. I opened my phone one day and bam, there it was. And I will never get it out of my head. Now, I understand for conservatives that this picture will probably hang on the walls in their homes. It'll probably hang in their bathrooms. You know, they'll rub one out to it because this kind of thing is effing awesome to them. And it is not to me. It bothers me. There is, near my house, and I might have talked about this before, a spot where a young girl died a number of years back. And, you know, I didn't know her, and she's not my daughter. She's not the daughter of somebody that I know, but it just destroys me. When children die, a parent has to bury a child. And so I hear about those things, and, you know, I take it upon myself. Let me try to lift some of that pain by at least mourning with you, because I couldn't handle it if it happened to me. I don't want it to happen to me, and I can't do anything, but I want to do something anyway. And so I drive by this sign, and without hesitation, you know, without missing a beat. It doesn't matter. My daughter sees this all the time. I'll take my damn hat off as I drive by. Am I making a difference? Am I bringing her back to her parents? No, I do it. No. But it's so important to me to protect the children that it hurts me that deep when it happens. But for conservatives, I'm sure if they lost their own children, that would suck. But as long as it's somebody else's and that child is brown, then it's A-okay.
As you sit here today, you do not know how many human beings have died while in the custody of the department that you lead. And you, in preparation for today's hearing, you didn't ascertain that number, but you don't know it today?
I don't have an exact figure for you.
Do you have a rough idea?
Sir, what I can tell you
I'm
is...
I'm talking about people who have died in your custody. You don't have the number?
I will get back to you with the number.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. They're just dead children. It doesn't matter. They're not your dead children, Senator. They're the dead children of brown people. So it's A-okay. I did this with the Black Lives Matter movement. I went through the list because I think it's important. These people won't get forgotten. It's important to say their names. Join me. There are seven, as of today, seven, June 30th, seven dead children. Thanks to the policies of the Trump administration at the border, because they're just trying to be tough. Seven dead children so far. Darylin, and that's not even the adults. Darylin Cristobal Cordova Valle, 10 years old. Say his name. Jacqueline Call McQuinn, 7. Say her name. Or his, it might be his. Felipe Alonso Gomez, 8. Say their names. Marihi Juarez, 20 months. Say their names. Carlos Hernandez Vasquez, 16 years old. Say their names. Wilmer Jose Ramirez Vasquez, 2. Aged 2. Say their names. Juan De Leon Gutierrez, 16. Say their names.
The Texas school board voted unanimously to fire a teacher who tried to report undocumented students to President Trump. Georgia Clark tweeted at the president that the school she had worked at had been taken over by illegal students from Mexico, writing in part, quote, Mr. President, Fort Worth Independent School District is loaded with illegal students from Mexico. Carter Riverside High School has been taken over by them. More than a dozen teachers, parents, and students spoke out in support of firing her at Tuesday's meeting.
It's time for the school board to decide. Which side are you on? The board needs to act immediately to make sure this woman never teaches in Texas again.
We do not need this kind of person in Texas. This is an embarrassment to Texas. It's an embarrassment to Tarrant County. And it is an embarrassment to Fort Worth.
Clark can appeal the decision, and she said that she did not know her tweets were public. The teacher is also under investigation for a complaint that she allegedly told a student they were, quote, illegal after the student asked for permission to use the bathroom.
Oh, I'm sorry, you need to use the bathroom? Nah, you're illegal. So Georgia Clark, Texas teacher, and you're going to have a few more Mexicans in Texas. Why? Well, because geographically, it's sort of right next to Mexico. And it's so if they come to the United States, might make some sense to, I mean, they can spread out to the other states, but if there's a bunch of them in Texas, well, that just makes geographic sense, but it's not a takeover. And so this teacher that's supposed to be protecting your children, her racism comes first, decides to tweet at the president about how her school's being taken over by Mexicans. Okay. They are there for an education because they would like to be productive members of society. And because they are not born with knowledge, they need to attend school. And if they attend a public school, then even I have to pay for it. I don't care. Because I want everybody to be educated. And it's not being taken over. They are attending school. Double standard here. If that school was for the white kids, well, they're just attending school. She sees a lot of brown kids. And, well, the president said that they're rapists and MS-13 gang members and all this other stuff. And so she tweets as if he's going to read it, like he cares. He doesn't care. You already voted for him. You're going to vote for him again, you dummy. Mr. President, got a message for you. Being taken over by Mexicans in Texas. Oh, shut up. But that's what comes first in the minds of these very frightened people that get to live in this alternate reality where everything that they hear that they don't like is fake and Mexicans are scary. and giving women rights is scary. I expect that Georgia Clark will lose her job. She really doesn't have that much support from people. And Texas is beginning to turn blue. It's currently in a state of purple. And it's because of things like this. These are the demographic changes that make the Republicans want to stop people from voting. Because people like this, this woman, this teacher that decided to try to turn in a bunch of kids because they're Mexican, this teacher is going to start losing. She shouldn't have this kind of power to begin with. But these folks are going to start losing their power when the states start to turn, because this racism, hopefully at some point, will no longer work.
You were not able to serve in Vietnam because of a bone spur condition in your feet. Do you wish you'd been able to serve? Would you like to have served your country?
Well, I was never a fan of that war, I'll be honest with you. I thought it was a terrible war. I thought it was very far away. Nobody ever, you know, you're talking about Vietnam, and at that time, nobody ever heard of the country.
Would you like to have served generally, perhaps in another?
I would not have minded that at all. I would have been honored, but I think I make up for it right now. And I think I'm making up for it rapidly because we're rebuilding our military at a level that it's never seen before.
I remember when I first met my father, and I was 15, and there were a lot of things that I did not know. And my father was talking with me, and he said, you know, as you get older, you're going to have to, you know, you turn 18, you're going to have to sign up for Selective Service. And I said, oh, I've heard of that. What is that? And he goes, well, that's how they do the draft. They pull your name from Selective Service and you know, you're off to war, you know, if it ever comes up. It doesn't mean it'll come up, but if it ever does, that's where they pull the names from. And I go, oh, you know, because they take the young people first. And I said, off to war? Well, I don't want to go off to war. And he goes, oh, you don't? He goes, look, none of us do. But America this and America that. He's a clearly conservative. And I go, okay, well, I think our wars are kind of dumb. I can't think of anything that we're fighting for that's worthy, or we fought for that's worthy since World War II. Vietnam was dumb. Not the stuff that Reagan did was dumb. Not the stuff that Bush the first did was dumb. And his dumb son did dumb war. Dumb. I think these wars are dumb. And he goes, you're going to sign up. And if they call you, you're going to go. Otherwise, you're a draft dodger. A draft dodger? And he goes, there's nothing. His words. Nothing that I hate more than a draft dodger. Are you going to be a draft dodger? Yes. My father's not a physically violent person. Otherwise, I imagine at that point, that's where I would have been punched or smacked or something. And he just had this visceral reaction about draft dodgers. So here's President Trump talking about gleefully dodging the draft. And it's okay because he made up for it by giving lots more money to the military, which the military was already not suffering for money. And they've said for a long, long time, holy S, why do you keep giving us so much money? We don't need any more money. He shows up and he gives them way more money. And they go, we still don't need all this money. And he goes, I'm fixing the military. You're welcome. Once again, conservatives do not like the draft dodgers unless... You can finish this sentence for me.
The three-judge panel, all appointed by President Obama, pressed both sides in what the New York Times describes as an hour-long lively hearing. In the end, the judges appeared to conclude that the government's arguments to toss the case are too narrow, but that the plaintiff's legal theories are too broad. A decision on if this case will proceed wasn't made, and it's not expected to come quickly. But we should note that the administration's claim that there is, quote, no constitutional right to a stable climate clearly comes, of course, from President Trump. Because in 2016, Donald Trump, the businessman, applied for a permit in Ireland to build a seawall around his golf resort. According to court filings, Trump International explicitly cited global warming and its consequences as their justification for building the barrier. The resort, they claim, is taking a beating from climate change, and it is the same resort that the president and the first lady arrived at last hour. How fun.
I think that permit for a seawall because of climate change should be plastered to the side of a building for everybody to see. It should be read on radio every minute of every day. It's proof. Trump believes in climate change. He knows that it's real. He's a real estate developer. I know, you know, everybody knows except conservatives, whom he tells he doesn't believe in climate change, and that they don't have to believe in climate change, and that we don't have to do anything about it. He believes in it, but he's doing this thing to hold on to these voters. And so he might not get to build his seawall, and some of his precious hotels might get torn to the ground. But that's okay, because the short-term gains that come with bringing in conservative voters who also do not believe in climate change is just fine with him. And so I play this clip, and you know about it. And this case that she's talking about is the one where the kids are suing for us to clean up the damn air and stop destroying the planet because they would like to inherit, they'd like to inherit a place to live. And so there's this case going forward, and the Trump administration is fighting against these kids. They go, no, you don't need clean air. You don't need clean water. You don't need a long, full life. You don't need to go your whole life without cancer. And so that's what they're fighting for. Okay, you and I know he believes in climate change, but...
So do you personally believe in climate change?
I believe that there's a change in weather, and I think it changes both ways. Don't forget, it used to be called global warming. That wasn't working. Then it was called climate change. Now it's actually called extreme weather.
The stupidity that is oozing off this man. Mark my words. Let me talk to just our conservative friends out there. He says things like this, even though he does not believe them, because he's doing them to hold on to you, the dumb conservative voter, not the smart ones. There's about like 8 or 9% of people that are not voting for him. But to hold on to the dumb ones, he does these things. But hear this. If Trump wins re-election, and I know all of my progressive friends are shaking right now, the fact that I even mentioned that. Sorry, you guys, we have to face reality. We're not conservative, so we have to believe in facts. Trump's already not doing anything for anybody. He's helped out all of his rich white friends, and that's it. He throws the occasional illusional bone to his conservative base, but he's not really giving them anything either, because a lot of them are working class, and he's screwing the working class. If he wins, let me say this today, June 30th, 2019, if Donald J. Trump wins re-election, not only is he going to continue to not do anything for any working people, up to and including you, the conservative voter, he will get 10 times worse because he will be unrestrained. I know you think he is now, but he's facing re-election, so he's restrained a little bit. But not only will he not continue to not help people, but he will get 10 times worse. I predict that by the end of his second term, if he gets a second term, he will not even have the support of the overwhelming Trump base. And you go, Melvin, that's impossible. Because we learned this week about a woman that he raped on Fifth Avenue. You remember the old thing about, if I killed somebody on Fifth Avenue, I wouldn't lose any voters. Well, the store, Bergman Dorf, is on Fifth Avenue in New York, and this woman came out this week and said that he raped her in a dressing room in that store. And guess what? Because he's a conservative, they don't care. So he raped somebody on Fifth Avenue, and he didn't lose any voters. If he gets that second term, he's not going to help you folks, and he will start going against you folks in a big way. And I think it's something that even Fox isn't going to be able to clean up.
I don't understand. I never have understood why anyone in America needs a semi-automatic AR-15 assault rifle at home. Why do they?
Well, a lot of them use them for entertainment. They do. I mean, it's really...
The gun's entertainment?
For some people, it's entertainment. They go out and they shoot and they go to ranges.
They use them for entertainment. These massive guns are rather all for entertainment. No, they're for terrorism. The guy doesn't believe a damn thing that he says. He sort of opens his mouth and the words fall out, and and the dum-dums fall in line, and, well, that's, say, Melvin, that's just the way it goes. No, this isn't going to end well, and I don't think it's going to end well even for conservatives.
Within everybody's common understanding that, you know, if you don't have a toothbrush, if you don't have soap, if you don't have a blanket, it's not safe and sanitary. Wouldn't everybody agree to that? Do you agree to that?
Well, I think those are, there's fair reason to find that those things may be part of safe and sanitary.
No, maybe, are a part. What do you say, maybe? But you mean there are circumstances when a person doesn't need to have a toothbrush, toothpaste, and soap for days?
Well, I think in CBP custody, it's frequently intended to be much shorter term. So it may be that for a shorter term stay in CBP custody, that some of those things may not be required.
The private prison system, nobody is more excited about what's happening at the border than the private prison system. What does it cost you to stay in a nice hotel? And I don't mean five stars. We'll get to that. But just like a 3.5, 4 star, like something pretty good. You know, you're not going to be sleeping with the rats and all the rest. What is about 150, 200, 250 bucks a night? You know, I have stayed in some beautiful, stunning hotels for like $300 or $400. Obviously, that's for vacation. We're not splurging like that all the time. But like $300 or $400, like just these gorgeous with lots of amenities. And you go, yeah, wow, you know. But then you go, man, my rent is like, or, you know, my rent and mortgage is like $1,400 or $1,500 a month. But then this is, you know, a third of that for one night. So you realize, whoa, you know, this is a vacation. This is very, very expensive. But you get, you know, that's what you get for that kind of money. We are paying to the private prison system down on the border to put kids in cages, 700 and I think 75, somewhere between 750 and 70, 775, $750 a day per child, $750. And they are putting them in cages, making them sleep on concrete floors. They are not giving them diapers. They are not giving them a fresh change of clothes. They're making them use the bathroom out in the open. And this week, they decided to go to court. That's this clip you just heard. They decided to go to court to argue against giving them soap and toothbrushes. This is real. This isn't just some random lawyer. This is the Trump administration's lawyer going to court to say that they should not provide the dignity that comes with soap and a clean mouth because they can't afford it. And so everybody learns about this story and they say, hey, what are you doing, Trump? You already treat them like crap. Now you're not giving them soap. Now you're not going to give them toothpaste. What the hell, man? And he goes, it's the Democrats. Democrats won't give us the money. And so the Democrats go, you have lots of money. You have $750 per day per child. Why the hell aren't they all staying in a five-star hotel? Because you could at that rate. You know, it includes your meals. And they go, give us more money. It's the Democrats. This is their fault. Give us more money. So the Democrats go, okay, fine. Here's more money. Take care of the children. And then it arrives on Mitch McConnell's desk and he says, we're not going to pass this. Yeah. This is a real thing. This is the reality that we live in right now.
Aren't toothbrushes and blankets and medicine, basic conditions for kids, aren't they a part of how the United States of America, the Trump administration, treats children?
Well, of course they are, Jay.
Well, the lawyer was arguing the opposite.
I can't speak to what that lawyer was saying. Yeah. It's one of the reasons we asked for more bed space.
We have money to give toothpaste and soap and blankets to these kids in this facility in El Paso County. Well, right now we do.
Of course we do.
So why aren't we?
My point is, it's all a part of the appropriations process. Congress needs to provide additional support to deal with the crisis at our southern border.
This is Mike Pence, our Christian vice president. Oh, he just thinks that this is hilarious. They don't have soap. Toothpaste. The Lord will provide. Sleeping on the floor in a crappy diaper. Kind of ruined Christianity for everybody, sir. I don't think you realize that. And because of how poisonous this religion has become to the people that hold on to this religion, this is how we ended up with what's referred to as state-sanctioned sexual assault in Missouri. So if you want to have an abortion, you have to get an in-utero ultrasound, okay? Intravaginal ultrasound. It's not in-utero because there's not a baby in there. But intravaginal ultrasound, okay? It's just for initial, okay? You got to get the initial one. Then you go and get the abortion, Bob's your uncle, and it's over. But the Republicans, and one of the Republicans in their state Senate, who is a doctor, went on camera and said that we need to do this because it's medically necessary, and we just want to look out for the safety of the patients. Well, what is that thing? Well, they decided that the women, after they've gone through all that, need to get another one. Need to get another ultrasound where they put the wand in the vag, and it's completely unnecessary. Doctors don't want to do it. Medically unnecessary. And you're just forcing these women to have that happen. The state senator, the doctor, cited his religion. Oh, yeah. We need to do this because God.
Doctors at this Missouri clinic, they do perform pelvic exams right before they do an abortion, which is standard medical practice, which is fine. But now, as of this week, what the state has started doing, what the state government is now doing, is that they've told the doctors at that one remaining clinic that they must do a second medically unnecessary invasive pelvic exam on every woman before she is allowed to start the punitive 3-day waiting period that is required of all women who need an abortion in Missouri. I mean, at that point, you're literally just going in to sign a consent form and meet with the doctor before they have to send you home to wait for 3 days. Only now, before they let you go from that first appointment, you must, by order of the state, take off your clothes and submit to an intrusive vaginal inspection that you do not need and that your doctor does not want to give you.
We either have to ask patients to subject themselves to a state-sanctioned, essentially, sexual assault, or they can't have an abortion here in Missouri.
So maybe the state is hoping that these doctors, faced with this impossible imperative, maybe the state is hoping, the benefit to the state here is that they're hoping that the doctors will give up and stop providing abortions altogether, which of course would leave Missouri with no provider since they're down to that one last clinic.
Rachel Maddow covered this, and she's obviously way visible. And with that, that state senator, who's also a doctor, said, you know what? This story bothers me. You need to stop covering this. And Rachel said, no, we are not going to stop covering this. State-sanctioned sexual assault. People started learning about it. People got outraged. And the doctor, the state senator, finally said, fine. Well, he didn't say fine. His official story is, oh, it is bothering me that this is happening. I am shocked that there is gambling in this casino. I cannot believe that this is after I said that this should happen. I cannot believe this is happening. This should stop. And for several weeks and over hundreds of patients, hundreds of women were sexually assaulted by their doctors, not because their doctors wanted to, but because the state said that they had to. And they said that they had to because this religious wingnut in the state house said that it needs to happen. He's the doctor. So the whole Senate went with, not that they wouldn't have went with it anyway. Like, that was his excuse. I'm a man of the Lord, and I want to protect the ladies and sexual assault when you go to your doctor. So I heard this clip a number of years ago. Wait, don't tell me. It's a fine show. I haven't missed it in years. And they talk about news in sort of a lighthearted way. Well, the things that they talk about can be pretty serious sometimes. And I'm going to play the clip for you. It's a fairly long clip, but I want to play the whole thing because I want to give it to you in context. And they were talking about the name John and feminism. Heads up. My legal name, I can't believe I'm saying this, my legal name is John. I don't go by it because I hate it. It's my father's name and I hate it. Huh, I don't think I've ever said that before. There it is. My name is Melvin. And so they do this thing about feminism and John, and I've been meaning to share this with you for years because this clip blows my mind.
McGee, the New York Times reported that despite strides made by companies in hiring women, women are still outnumbered in executive-level offices by whom?
By men?
By men, but not just by men, by a specific kind of men.
White men.
Well, yes. I'm going to give it to you. They pointed out that in America's corporate suites, there are fewer women than there are men named John.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There are more CEOs named John than there are CEOs who are women. If that seems like bad news, don't worry. There are also more male CEOs named James. That's right. Some men are finally breaking the Jimmy ceiling. Yeah. There are also more Republican senators who are Johns, and we mean that both literally and prostitutionally. The problem is clear. Affluent white parents need to come up with better names for your male children, okay? No, like, more Johns.
Like LaDainian.
Something.
Or just like... The better solution is all female babies from here on out should be named John.
Absolutely. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe they're not looking for men. They're just looking for people named John.
Yeah, that's been the problem. I didn't know. We don't need feminism, yes. You guys. We just need to change our name to John.
And of course, they talk about it in a lighthearted way, and everybody's having their laughs, and I go, what? There are more. We should have women in control of everything. Obviously not the women who hate women. Those women are going to have to be excluded until they learn to stop hating women. But they say there's more dudes, like CEOs named John, than there are women in those positions. And I got to stop and I go, ugh, that's my stupid name. Oh, my God. Okay. So I think one of the things that the Democrats are missing out on right now is not just the way they talk to African-Americans. And all of you are going to have to learn that. And that doesn't mean bringing up hot sauce and fried chicken and barbecues. That's not the way you talk. Those are called stereotypes. And I understand that they come with a degree of truth, but you have to find a different way to talk to African-Americans. And the way you talk to them is you start first by listening to them. So do that. The other thing is with the ladies, plenty of women who I have to assume hate other women voted for Donald Trump, and they're willing to do so again. Those clips that I played earlier of those dumb Trumpers, all women. I don't know if you caught that. So the Democrats need to start learning how to talk to women. And I think one of the people that has now the women on the trail, the running for the Democratic nomination, I think they're doing fairly well. But the dudes need to learn. And Mayor Pete this week, or last week, was asked about, hey, there's lots of great women on the trail. Why the hell should we vote for you? And I think he handled it fairly masterfully, but I think he could have done better.
You have a tremendous resume, one that speaks to your character and your capabilities. But you are running in a field of truly exceptional candidates, particularly in the case of the women who are running, like Senators Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren. So my question to you is, why should the women of America vote for you over our sisters, who are kind of more qualified?
Look, I admire so many of the people running. They're extraordinary. And by the way, we ought to have a woman in the Oval Office right now. I'm still disappointed that didn't happen. Now, the other thing that I want the women of America to know, because I've met a lot of women who say, I like you, I like your message, I think you got an appealing candidacy, but I just will not vote for a man this time, is that I get it, and whether you decide to be for me or not, I promise that I will be for you.
Pretty good. I don't know how, you know, I can't cite specifically what he could have done better, but it's pretty good, you know. But with that, I hope Mayor Pete went back to his campaign with that and said, hey, you saw it, I handled it, but our campaign needs to learn how to talk to women. And obviously just promising not to have their doctor sexually assault them should work, but it's not going to necessarily. So we need to find a way. Talk to the ladies. A few more dumb things, putting it that way, and then I'm going to get the crap out of here. Okay, so Sean Hannity lives in this alternate reality that I've talked about for some time. Recently, Speaker Pelosi said that she really doesn't want to impeach Trump. She really doesn't want to do it. She didn't want to do it to George W. Bush either, even though he started the illegal Iraq war and lied about it and all this other stuff. She really doesn't want to impeach him. So she said she would much rather see him in jail. And then that leaked out. And then Hannity pissed his little britches.
Pelosi now apparently telling senior Democrats she'd like to see Trump behind bars. Based on no actual crime, she wants a political opponent locked up in prison. That happens in banana republics. Beyond despicable behavior. And by the way, they would literally turn, in many ways, the USA into a country we no longer recognize.
So Hannity is not self-aware, and apparently he does not remember all of the lock her up chants. It was okay when it was happening to Hillary Clinton. But now that somebody wants to throw Trump in prison for actually breaking laws, do we live in a banana republic? So John Heilman is one of the folks that works on MSNBC as the commentator, and he was asked about this. And, you know, he was on one of these dumb panels that they always do. And he used to work with Hannity, and he's intimate with how Hannity works and how Hannity operates. And so when the panel, which these things are usually completely useless, when the panel came around to him, he just kind of lost it.
Sean's full of it, right? And we talk about the hypocrisy of what was on display with this thing last night. It's hypocritical. We talk about lunacy, I think was your phrase. It's lunatic. But it's not those things, mostly. What it mostly is the relentless, disciplined, aggressive pursuit of a business model. The business model of Fox News is to create an alternative reality that is destroying the country. And in that alternative reality, Hillary Clinton's a criminal. She was a criminal from the day that Donald Trump said that thing on stage at the first debate, the second debate in 2016, mm-hmm. and then on the convention, at the Republican convention. She's been a criminal then. She's a criminal now. They've created a world where there are tens of millions of people who think Hillary Clinton's a criminal. So Sean's not crazy. He gets what he's doing. That's his business model. Mm-hmm. And I think to be clear-eyed about it is to understand what they are doing. And it's part of why Nancy Pelosi faces the decisions that she does. She has. I've been critical of her for how she's framed this impeachment debate. Mm-hmm. And I think she's not speaking clearly about it. I think she's undermining the House's institutional responsibilities to pursue an impeachment inquiry. But the political reality she's confronting is the political reality created by Sean Hannity and his business model built on lies and fantasy and hypocrisy. And that is what she's dealing with every day, is that there are tens of millions of people who not only haven't read the Mueller report, but don't think there's anything bad in the Mueller report about Donald Trump and think Hillary Clinton to this day should be in jail. And until we get past that somehow, and I have no idea how to get past it, but until we get past it, it's going to be the political challenge that someone like Nancy Pelosi has to navigate on this question.
It's a business model. What's happening at Fox isn't news. It's a business model. And it's been working for years. Impeachment was written into the Constitution specifically for the type of president that Donald Trump is. But because of what's happening at Fox News, we're finding it impossible to somehow impeach this guy that needs to be impeached.
For so many people here, that the key calculation is, would the benefits of impeachment outweigh the risks? And look, that is just impossible to say. It's impossible to say how a Trump impeachment would play out, although him leaving office is extremely unlikely. That would require 20 Republican senators to vote against him. And even if they did that, there is still no guarantee that Trump would actually leave. He basically told us as much out loud.
When you look at past impeachments, whether it was President Clinton or I guess President Nixon never got there, he left. I don't leave. There's a big difference. I don't leave.
Yeah, of course Trump wouldn't leave. You think he'd hold a press conference and bashfully say into a camera, I was wrong? In what reality would that happen? That then he'd graciously say, I would now let someone else be the president? You're insane. Then what? He'd pack a suitcase and walk, physically walk out of the White House and just not be the president anymore? No! He'd make us drag him out like an uncooperative toddler. You know this. You know that's true.
So episode number 300, and I have learned a lot in the last number of weeks about the people that listen to this show. Namely, there are a lot of people that I know. I always expect people that I know not to listen. But I've had folks come up to me every so often and go, you're stopping the show? And that has surprised me. You know, I know that there's quiet people that listen and, you know, they don't reach out. And that's fine. And I provided this for years, and I've done it, and I've lost a lot of sleep over it, like doing this show, like lost a lot of sleep doing this show because it's so exhausting, this and the other things that I do. And about a year ago, made the decision, going to get to a nice round number, and I'm going to walk away from it. You go, but Melvin, look at this media landscape. You know, with Donald Trump should be impeached, and we can't even get to impeachment because of the conservative media outlets that are out there just feeding lies to everybody, and they're eating those lies, and those lies are very delicious. Those lies are delicious to them. You got us. Okay. And I say, no, I got to go. I can't do this show. As a matter of fact, I'm doing this show on about 4 or 5 hours sleep right now. I shouldn't be, but I'm driven. This stuff drives me because I love it so much. And I said, 300, and I'm going to walk away from the damn show. And I'm not. I'm calling that off. I am not going to continue to operate a show a week as I've done for the last 7 years with two other jobs, you know, the business and then the dumb job I got to keep for health insurance. I'm finally figuring that stuff out. And I've decided that I'm not going to wipe out the damn show. But what is going to have to happen in the short term, at least until I eliminate one of my other jobs, hopefully not the DJ job, is this show is just going to have to move to about once a month. I've developed some habits with respect to reading. I've developed habits for collecting audio clips for those shows, and those habits aren't dying. I've tried to kill them off as I've gotten closer to episode number 300, but they're not, I can't stop those things. They're compulsive now. And doing this show is as much a part of my life as anything else is. And with that, I'm going to continue it, but until I get down to just one other job, so I have two jobs and now three jobs, I'm just going to do about an episode a month, which is about what I've been doing right now anyway, because it's the busy season for me. So I'll continue to do this. You will continue to have this. And I want to thank you for being here for all these years. This is The Fire You Can't Put Out, our official homes, TFYCPO.podbean.com. You can like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TFYCPO. Listen on the go! You know, because we live in the age of the internet. Individual episodes are available on iTunes, and they are available on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There you'll always find Melvin. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with you, our listener base. So thank you for listening. We're on The Fire You Can't Put Out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Thank you, Kevin, for all these years of support, man. Can't tell you how much I appreciate it. And I want to thank you out there for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I have woken you up, good morning.